Welcome back to the Serving Up podcast. This is episode 11. This podcast is brought to you by the Chain Restaurant Total Rewards Association, or CERTRA, as we call ourselves. CERTRA is a nonprofit HR organization focused on restaurant industry employee total rewards, compensation, and benefits. To find out more about CERTRA or to become a member, check us out at CERTRAweb.org. My name is Stephanie Foran, and I'm a CERTRA board member. Today, I have David Jordan here with us from Littler again. David is a longtime speaker and friend of CERTRA. He is a shareholder and co-chair for the hospitality industry group with Littler. He focuses his practice on employment counseling and litigation, including all aspects of labor relations and employment law. David is an active speaker on labor and employment law issues, appearing before trade organizations, human resource professionals, and corporate legal departments. David, welcome back.
Hey, Stephanie. Great to talk to you.
Well, you were here with us in December, I think. We were talking about kind of all relevant things post-election. And we wanted to check back in with you. We didn't have a conference this summer, but normally we get a nice update from you at the CERTRA conference. And so I thought it might be a good time for us to connect and kind of hear what's been going on legally in the restaurant industry and overall kind of what you're seeing. And maybe we could get started with all the things that are happening COVID related, because it seems like there's so much of that going on right now with vaccinations and mandates. And what are you seeing there?
I mean, you got that right. There's a lot of it going around. I tell you what, December of last year seems like years ago that we talked last. And it has been, I assume it's been a whirlwind for you and for all your members. And it has been a whirlwind for labor and employment attorneys. I've never in my whole career been as busy as I've been over the last year and a half. So I feel for all of you out there on the front lines dealing with these issues. I tell you what, COVID has been fascinating to watch. I mean, it's been a terrible disease, and it's affected a lot of people, and it's affected our industry in really profound ways. And when I say our industry, I mean the hospitality industry. But it's been really interesting to see us go from, you know, sort of let's shut down, then let's test folks to get people back in and let's figure out how to mask people up, to now vaccines and what do we do to get folks sort of back at it. And there's been a lot of water under the bridge. We're now seeing a pretty strong development in COVID-related litigation. I think we've had nationwide 2,000 lawsuits filed nationwide. 165 of those are class actions. And if you want to know what states those are in, imagine, like, first guess, right? California. Yeah. Leads the charge, followed by New Jersey and Florida and New York and Ohio and Texas. A lot of litigation dealing with things like paying for tests, requiring testing, and we've had litigation now beginning about mandatory vaccines. So there's a lot of, I think, things beginning to explode as people get back in to the workforce. And, you know, it's affected labor shortage issues, and we could talk about that a little bit. Yeah. I think the focus right now for a lot of employers is mandatory vaccines or voluntary vaccine programs, and what should we do and what's allowed. And so there's a lot of interest there, and I'm happy to talk about any of that if you'd like.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think we're all dealing with that, trying to figure out, you know, where everybody went and why aren't they coming back?
Yeah. Well, I think you guys are in a precarious situation, right, in the hospitality industry, because we want to open up our restaurants to customers, and we want customers to feel safe, right? And we feel like, as an industry, the easiest way to do that is for customers to see us masked up and hear that we're vaccinated, right? Maybe even want to show that we're vaccinated, right? But on top of that, we can't find employees. Employees are jumping ship and moving to different places and or aren't coming back into the workforce. Unemployment benefits haven't run out. We have employers that are offering all kinds of remarkable incentives to get people back in to the workforce. And a lot of that is sort of raising interesting legal issues. maybe I could talk about the vaccine mandate for a minute.
Absolutely.
A lot of confusion and question around that. And so let me start with, right, I think we're finally getting our arms around this idea that we as employers can mandate that employees take the vaccine, regardless of whether it's been approved by the FDA or whether it's under some emergency use authorization. And of course, we've just had the Pfizer FDA approval on Monday, but even before then,
right,
we can mandate vaccines in the workplace. There was a lawsuit down here in Texas with Methodist Hospital. The order came out earlier this summer. The court said, yep, sure enough, require these vaccines. So I think that employers that are worried about whether there can be, I got dinging going on. Let me stop my dinging here real quick. I apologize.
It's all right. I'm having the same issue.
I'm gonna blame it on you here real quick. Me. I think this idea of whether we want to have a mandatory vaccine is probably a moral decision, maybe a decision that probably is based on this idea of, is it going to hurt our retention of staff or not? But from a legal perspective, we can do it. Littler just finished a survey that we put out Monday that talked about what kind of vaccine mandates are you considering? Is it a full mandatory vaccine? Is it a mandate? We'd like you to voluntarily vaccinate. We'd like you to either vaccinate or test every day or test every week or test every month. And, about 20% of employers are considering mandatory vaccination programs. But I'll tell you, in the hospitality industry, I think that's really tough, particularly with blue collar entry level workers. We do see some clients, though, you'd like to know, where different segments of the industry of that particular company have a mandatory vaccine program. So, for example, the corporate headquarters, right, might have a mandatory policy, but the field, right, the folks out in the stores may not. So we see that a lot. Of course, if you don't want to have a mandatory vaccine, these programs, what we call soft mandates, the vaccination or test, those are lawful programs. There are questions coming up, though, about whether we should pay employees for the time that they test. And I think that there are a lot of practitioners like myself that think that the most conservative thing to do is to pay for the time testing an employee's at home. It takes them 15 minutes to do their COVID test. We should pay for that and probably pay for the COVID test itself. Department of Labor's newest position is that the hospitality workers are likely, when they take these tests, are likely doing work that is integral and indispensable to their job as a hospitality worker because they're public facing.
Right.
So there are wage and hour issues that are coming up with regards to these testing issues that are going on in the workplace.
It's just all tied together. I mean, that's the thing. You try and do the right thing one place, and then it seems like it's leading to something else. And that kind of makes me think about the tipping situation. I think I was telling the story of my mother, wanted to tip a fast food worker during COVID. And she kept saying, they told me they couldn't do it because she wanted to just add a little tip amount to her credit card bill. And I explained to her, Mom, they don't even have a way to do that. You'd have to give them cash. And so I've heard that there are groups that are really trying to fight for that, to allow employees that aren't necessarily doing a full server job to still be able to get tips. What else are you seeing on the tip side?
I tell you what, this tip issue is just as fascinating as COVID. So COVID is clearly changing tipping patterns.
Right.
Tipping patterns were changing before COVID. Our technology systems were changing. More companies had the capacity to accept tips. than before. We saw more credit card sales and cash sales. That was making it easier.
Yeah.
And we've seen changes in the way we deliver food service in this mm-hmm. country, more fast casual, more counter service, less full service. And so all of that has led to some really dramatic changes in tipping patterns. But you're right. During the middle of COVID, right, when you drove through the McDonald's drive-thru and they gave you your first cheeseburger in 6 months, yeah. guy, like $5. You're like, yeah. thank you so much. Here's $5.
Absolutely.
Right? That guy didn't know what to do with that tip. I mean, probably put it in his pocket and didn't tell anybody, right?
Yeah. I'm sure there was a lot of that.
But there's a lot of confusion about what to do. And a couple of points to make. Some companies have said, we are not going to enter the world of tips. We are going to discourage customers from giving tips. In fact, we're going to instruct our people to tell customers, thank you for your $5, but we don't want it. And then other companies have tried to develop programs, as you suggest, to accept those tips. Now, there's really not a law or a rule that says employees cannot accept tips. The real tricky part is, what do you do with those tips when it's in the hand of the cashier mm-hmm. or whoever got it? Can you require that employees share the tips? How do they report the tips? And the laws and regulations we have on the books are not written for what to do when you walk up to the to-go cashier and pick up your chicken wings and give them a tip. It's not really written on what to do with that tip. Yeah, that to-go cashier might not have done a thing other than hand you a bag and take your credit card.
Right.
But if you look at our existing rules, they would say she gets the windfall of all that money. So there's a lot of confusion there. So companies have been looking at all the tip share rules across the country and what are the rules regarding how we share tips. And of course, federal law, that's a little bit easier to deal with than state law. State law continues to be a patchwork of problems. And on top of all that, right, with regards to tips, the Biden administration in June decided to rewrite the tip rules as it relates to the tip credit. And that is, how much work can you perform in a tipped occupation doing work that is not necessarily tip generating? And you've heard me talk about this for years, the 80-20 rule. Basically, the Biden administration wanted to bring back the rule and they asked for comments over the summer. Mm-hmm. I just got done writing comments for Littler and writing comments for other trade associations. There were 1,800 comments.
Wow.
Basically telling the Biden administration that if you require us to basically hire another worker to roll the silver, to bust the table, to hokey the floor, to fill up the ice in the service alley, we're not going to survive as an organization. And I know this trade association is made up of a lot of larger members, national and large regional members. Yeah. But there are a lot of small businesses out there and independents that, they have one or two servers and can't hire a third to do all the non-tipped work. And those folks are really going to struggle when the Department of Labor takes a different position. So there's a lot going on with tips. And I'll make one last comment about tips. You really set me off with tips. All of this COVID stuff,
yeah,
we're requiring employees to basically spend money on masks and spend money on getting on COVID tests and spending money going and getting vaccines and checks. These workers that are paid a tip credit that is below minimum wage, if we require them to take on a cost, right, that's really the employer's cost, mm-hmm. we're going to bust the tip credit. And unlike a company where the risk of doing that is just that expense.
Sure.
The hospitality industry, the risk is the entire tip credit if we break the tip credit rules. So getting these things wrong with regards to tipped employees can be really dangerous.
Yeah, because the manager piece kind of came in too, because during COVID, folks wanted to give tips to managers as well. So, you know, kind of, again, breaking that rule. So it just seems like everything was sort of on the table, and it seems like a time for us to really, really reevaluate. So I'm hoping that those 1800 comments that went through have some impact.
Well, I'll tell you, the manager issue was fascinating because, as you know, in a lot of places, it was the hourly workers that were laid off, but it was just the three or four managers that ran the restaurant.
Right.
And all of them could be exempt potentially. And they were all taking tips and all sharing tips. I think we're going to see some litigation come out of that. I think a lot of companies decided that really there's two pathways companies decided, which was, we're not going to require we're going to let managers take tips from customers, but we're not going to require those tips be shared with other people. And the other strategy was that those managers essentially were going to be told to not accept tips at all. Mm. And I think that was really difficult for managers who thought, you know what, I'm getting paid a crappy salary anyway. I'm out here waiting tables and now I can't take the tips. Yeah. So a lot of companies in that situation, I think, have thought, you know what, we're just going to take the risk. If we mess it up, we mess it up. We'll get sued. We'll say, look, it's COVID. You really want to sue us for trying to do the right thing? Go at it.
So what else is going on that we need to be thinking about or aware of?
Well, you know, there's so much going on these days. I mentioned sort of at the top of the talk about the labor shortage. I mean, what a crazy time.
Yeah.
Workers. And, you know, it's
and we're different. Pushing people away by making them have, you know, vaccinations and
Right. So we've got unemployment benefits that seemingly never run out anymore.
Right.
People are.
Oh, and COBRA, don't forget your free benefits.
Right. Free benefits and free wages. Yeah. You know, I was sitting at a diner the other night working really late, and I was listening to another booth, and it was a mom and a daughter, and the daughter was talking about going back to work. And the mom said, look, honey, look how much money the government's giving you. Why would you not just stay home and read a book and take this time for yourself? That's what the government's trying to tell you. And I thought, no, that's not what the government is telling anybody. But that's what's happening, right? So we've got this compound of state and federal benefits that keep getting paid to workers. We've got COBRA out there being paid. We've got a workforce now where they feel like, why would they ever work hard again? COVID's going to kill them. Let's go to the beach, right? Let's drink. Let's not work hard. It's this idea of working really, really hard for something 10 and 20 and 30 years down the road is eroding. And I think all of you have seen this, the work ethics falling apart. And then to your point, we've got now COVID mandates, these vaccine mandates. So we're trying to make people do things they don't want to do.
Right.
A portion of the workforce. And so we've got employers that are trying to incentivize people to come back, whether it's signing bonuses or referral bonuses or retention bonuses. Just, you stay with us for a year, we'll pay you X. We're driving wages up, which is requiring us to drive up prices. A couple of warnings there I would offer your membership, Stephanie, is that any payment we're making to the workforce, we need to figure out whether that is something that's going to have to go into the regular rate of pay purposes of overtime. And things like retention bonuses. So if you stay with us for 6 months, we'll give you $1,000. That's definitely includable in the regular rate for purposes.
Right.
So we should think carefully about these incentives. There's a lot of information about this issue out there. Mm-hmm. Just got to sort of pay attention to it, but everyone should flag that issue. Paying money, it's just like any other time we pay bonuses.
Right.
That we have to keep that in mind.
Yeah, with all that we're doing on the front end now, that is a different way of thinking of those things, and I can see how that would get overlooked.
So one of the questions I get a lot in hospitality is, I've been vaccinated, right? Can I require my employees to wear a badge that says I've been vaccinated, to wear a little sticker that says I've been vaccinated? We want to show our customers
right. We
have a vaccinated workforce. It's a really fascinating question. I think most practitioners are beginning to appreciate that whether you are vaccinated, right, very well could be confidential. Now, right. You hear a lot of people talk about HIPAA, right? This has nothing to do with HIPAA. It really has to do with the EEOC's rules on confidentiality of medical information. And we really thought about 6 months ago, no problem. You want to make people wear purple badges that say they've been vaccinated? But the EEOC this summer came out with a rule that said your vaccination status is confidential medical information. Well, if that's the case, we can't just go tell people that Susie's vaccinated. We can't require Susie wear that badge. Mm-hmm. Now, we could say, hey, Susie, would you like to wear a badge that says you're vaccinated?
It's up to you.
It's up to you. But we are beginning to see some privacy issues creep up a little bit about vaccinations. And in some places, like the state of Montana, not a hotbed for hospitality, but
right.
Vaccination status is actually a protected category, like minorities right. and race and religion and women. So in those situations, we have to be careful about how we treat our non-vaccinated workforce.
I remembered what it was. It was related to, and this might not be your total area of expertise, but Delta Airlines coming out saying that they were going to actually charge employees who were unvaccinated, because what they're seeing is, on average, folks going into the hospital with experiencing a COVID, that's a $50,000 bill every time that's hitting these, employer plans. So curious what you're seeing in that direction there.
Well, I'll tell you what, I saw that story about the same time that you and your membership saw that story this week. And I reached out to our old buddy, Finn Presley, who has spoken to you all before about benefits. And I said, Finn, this cannot be allowed, right? This can't be something employers can do. And believe it or not, Finn said, sure, they can probably do that. And if you wire around the wellness regulations just right, that there is a way to incentivize people under the benefits plans to get the vaccination. I learned something every day. Stephanie, you do too.
Yeah.
Clearly don't know everything, but Finn is the man. And Finn said probably lawful under the law.
Well, I'm wondering with the recent FDA approval of the Pfizer vaccine, maybe that will, kind of help people kind of get, I mean, I can see why as an employer, I would really want to encourage my team to do that. And with, I'm here in the South, we've definitely seen a strong rise in the Delta variant, and that has been very impactful, not only in, losing employees who you need to have there, hopefully short term if they're out with symptoms. But I think it just, to your point on the labor shortage, we've already lost so many people who've decided to go to other industries. And now, to deal with that on top of this, and the entire cost, certainly in the restaurant industry, it's very low margins as it is. So adding that, you've seen the progression or maybe you haven't, I'm sure you've heard about it though, but the rates are going up. We're having to pay a lot more for the same folks. And we've got folks coming off of furlough that may have been making one rate who are coming back at $2 and $3 more, just to come back to work. So there are a lot of costs that are out there for restaurants that don't have much to spare. Sales are still down in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And it doesn't, there's certainly not a lot more money in the economy to pay for more expensive food and service. Mm-hmm. So, in the past, you raise your labor costs, you raise your menu prices, right? And that's just not an easy option. I think we're going to begin to see small and mid-sized restaurants and hospitality providers start to sort of fall out of the market. And I think that's a scary time. And I'm sure you see this already, but nationwide, I think we see underperforming stores begin to close and shutter because they just can't recover from the labor shortage.
Well, and on top of that, the supply chain issues. I mean, are you seeing anything on the legal side from the supply chain piece, how that's being impacted?
Well, no, I think I think the entire supply chain, and not just in the U.S., but if you are looking overseas for, you know, product or materials or supplies,
yeah,
that's going to get worse probably before it gets better. And again, all that just drives labor costs. And that, I think that's where we continue to push back on Congress to be sensitive to businesses right now. Instead of increasing the level of regulation, we need to be making it, we need to deregulate, make it easier for business to operate and be nimble. But unfortunately, that's not necessarily happening. And this drive in litigation, you know, this idea that plaintiffs' lawyers need to eat too is ridiculous. But that's what we're seeing. So I always feel like I talk to you guys. I'm always like, the sky's falling. And I don't know why you guys ever invite me back, because I always tell you how scary it is out there. But it is, it's a little bit of a scary time for you all. And all I can tell you is, I think, you know, to take time to sort of think through each of your actions and the ramifications. And I'm so glad your organization is here for you guys to sort of talk about ideas with each other. Mm-hmm. Be a sounding board. I mean, we're just getting ready to enter a whole new phase of COVID, and we haven't even talked about today, and that's boosters.
Right.
So all these vaccine mandates we have, are we going to turn around and start requiring boosters? So we continue to like evolve just to sort of figure out one area, we evolve into something else. And I think we're going to continue to see this issue change over the next year and a half.
And I'm curious on kind of on the furlough side too, because, you know, in our industry, we're just a little bit different. We are restaurant related, but we're in sort of a corporate environment. And we've had a lot of folks that just, their locations haven't opened back up yet. So therefore employees are still kind of in this furloughed state, and that could be over a year. When they get furloughed and then they are asked to come back to work and they don't want to come back to work, but yet they don't necessarily get termed on your books. You know, it's like, are they still an employer? Are they not an employee? It just feels like we're going to have a lot of liability out there in those kinds of situations with these. Were they an employee? Were they not? You know, someone gets paid accidentally because they go through a system change and they weren't technically an employee, but now all of a sudden they're paid a large sum of money, you know?
Well, you know, that's exactly right. And I'll add another risk factor that you didn't mention in there is we sort of stopped talking about WARN.
Right.
But, you know, furloughs that sort of started a year and a half ago that we sort of forgot about, and now they've been out of work for 6 months or more. There's arguments that there's WARN triggers that have occurred, and there may be money due for our failure to give notice. Now you'd say, oh, you know, the COVID was totally unforeseeable.
Notice enough? Yeah.
But you know what? It was unforeseeable in March of 2020. But by June of 2020, was it really that unforeseeable that we were going to have to close a restaurant or furlough some folks? So that's something to consider. Just sort of keep that scratched out on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing that I might mention is that now that we're all remote, I know you're remote.
Right.
You know, we call this the wandering worker.
Yeah.
And the wandering worker, now implicates so many other state laws for
right.
reasons. And I mean, think about how difficult it is to figure out the payroll and compensation and benefits rules in one state. And then you have employees spread out across the country, which, by the way, you may not even know.
Yeah.
Right. And that's created some real big problems and headaches for companies that, yeah, you didn't even know you had somebody operating in California, but guess what? Now your company has to pay California tax and California overtime.
Right.
If someone wanted to move to San Diego for the summer.
Yeah. I had a New Jersey issue where someone had not been set up on a New Jersey unemployment, unfortunately. And we didn't figure that out until, of course, all this came up and he needed to utilize it. So yeah, it seems like there's a lot of pitfalls there, and employees don't always tell you that they've relocated.
We actually have a client who's decided we'll let people wander, but we're going to have states that can't go to. Guess what one of those states is?
California, of course.
That's exactly right. And they sort of have a short list of no states. Like, you can move, but if you go to these states, can't work for us anymore. So pick some other state.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yeah. So a hit list of states.
Yeah. Anything else that you might want to share with us? We really appreciate you giving us some time today. There's just so much that continues to go on. And I was really glad we got to connect. You know, it's been, what, just about 6-8 months since we chatted last. So,
well, I could talk all day.
I bet.
I'll tell you that we are doing a great job these days of keeping folks up to date on littler.com.
Oh, so great.
If you want to sort of go there, there's a way to search all of our publications, littler.com. And then I'll tell you, look, if you want to be on our mailing list, I won't bother you. I won't solicit you. I won't give you a hard time, but you can send me your name and contact information, and I'll make sure you're on one of our mailing lists. And you know, you'll get peppered with stuff from time to time about news articles that every now and then you'll have interest in reading.
And we've invited you back to do this year's December webinar. So always excited to have you join us then and keep us up with all the great things that are going on, and things we need to be worried about. It seems like that's kind of the rule. But thank you again so much for your time. And we look forward to talking to you in December.
It looks great. Thank you, Stephanie. Really enjoyed it.
Okay. Bye-bye.